Okay, well, that was how not to begin a session.
I see that our high tech setup this morning is intact. Just so you know, so that you don't say anything you'll regret later, I do. I am recording my session. That's what that thing is there. And as we can see, it's actually working. With any luck, we'll continue working for the duration of the session. So what my intention is, and in fact what I have been doing, is to record the talks that I've been giving here in Australia. I did Canberra, and then, as you mentioned, University of the Sunshine Coast, and I'm going to a few other cities after this. And I'll be making all of these audio recordings available on my website as MP3s. Some of them are available already. And these will be basically yours to do with whatever you wish. They'll be released under a Creative Commons license. That means you can copy them, fold them, twist them, spindle them, mutilate them, add them to things, subtract from things, do whatever you want to them, just don't sell them. And that's the only restriction, because the idea here is that this content, and in fact all the content on my website and everything I show you, is intended to be open access for everybody to share. And so it's all there for you. Go to it, and you don't need to, if you use any of the stuff, don't write me and ask permission or anything like that, because there's no need to do that. There's no license requirement or anything like that that you do it. If it's on my site, if you see it, you like it, use it. If you don't like it, /dots just down the road. Okay. That's so bad. I wanted to play you a little video, but you must restart your system for the configuration changes made to QuickTime 5 player to take effect. Yeah. Oh, it might work anyways. Well, why would they do that? Why would they stop me? Yeah, that's pretty much it. Just fun.
I'm Steve Downs, and I'm here to show you some interesting lessons we learned about analog education theory, and especially self-directed learning. Yes, we learned about self-directed learning not through the study of humans, but through the study of the ultimate self-directed learners, ants. And so we see the ants going through the maze. What you want to notice is the ants are going in the proper direction through the maze. They're not going off down side streets. They're not getting stuck in dead ends. They're going in the one end and back up the other end without making a mistake. Now, this is not natural behavior for ants. Ants do not want to go through the maze. Ants simply want to go in a straight line. The whole trick here is to force them to go in curves and even back against the direction of their travel. Here you see the ants navigating around the corner against their natural instincts. How did we train them to do this? We used simple principles of self-directed learning. First of all, we started off with where the ants want to go anyways, where they are and where they're going. They were traveling in a straight line. Then we made small incremental changes to their direction. We drew a line across their path. The ants went around the line. Then we drew another line across their path. Then they went around the line and back up around the line. And we kept drawing lines until we had constructed a maze, forcing them to twist and turn against their natural grain. Now ants are ant self-directed learners. They like to cut the corners. If you give them an opportunity, they will go over the line rather than around it. So you have to be consistent and firm in your direction, making incremental changes, and always reinforcing your lesson by building up the walls that direct the ants to where you want them to go.
Down to the chat column, this man is a trained professional.
This is so dangerous! Working with ants is difficult, but stay tuned next time when we work with cats.
That was actually created and produced in Australia. I don't know if you want to take credit for that, but I recorded that. Obviously, it's meant more in fun than in seriousness. Recorded that while I was working with Tim Van Gelder and the other people down at the University of Melbourne, working on putting some philosophy courses and things like that online. And I found some time for extra stuff. Now, if anyone has a napkin or Kleenex or something, I'd really appreciate it because I have smeared my glasses. And some shirts are good for wiping glasses and some are not. This is one that is not. So, that would work. That would be fantastic. So, what I'm doing here, I'm breaking just about every rule of giving talks. You're not supposed to do this in front of a group, but yeah, you know, it's been pretty informal. It's been really informal. I never know because you said the name of a town, and I can't pronounce the name of that town. So, like, I still think of it as Brisbane, even though it's like an hour and a half away. Right, that. I thought it was Noosa, and I was fine as long as it was Noosa. I can handle Noosa. Thank you very much. But yeah. It's been pretty relaxed. We've kept it pretty free-flowing. Today's talk, according to my notes, is titled Open Education, the Semantic Web, and the Personalization of E-Learning. And if the talk in Brisbane is any guide, we will get to all of those topics today. But as with any talk that I ever give any time, I may or may not stick to the agenda that I've set for myself. I will feel completely free to totally abandon the program, actually the more I do veer from it, the better. The purpose of this talk isn't for me to be saying the stuff that I have to say, but it's for your benefit. So if you want to steer or direct this talk in an area that's more of interest to you, by all means, that's what we'll do. If you have comments, questions, interjections, things to throw out, please do feel free to contribute. I'm not wedded to the sound of my own voice. And actually, I like to have a little break to have some coffee while people are talking. So the more interactive this is, the better. So that's about where I'm starting from. Where I want to go with this talk, we sort of left off in the morning. And we were on some trends, and I want to pick up with those trends, and these trends will actually evolve into our topic. We were talking about blogs and things like that this morning. I'm going to cover things like blogs and wikis and stuff related to that. Talk about RSS. I'm going to show the work that I've been doing with RSS. If I remember, I'll show you, if you're interested, the back end of my own website. I'll show you EduRSS. I will actually tie it into learning objects and learning object theory with things like DLORN. I'll talk a bit about distributed repositories. So a little sociology, a little tech, a little networks, a little theory, and it'll all sort of smoosh together like that. How does that sound to you guys as a plan? Great, because I didn't have another one. That wouldn't have stopped me though. And if you had said you wanted, remarks on the Manchurian dynasty's impact on paper manufacture in northern Canada, I'm there. I know nothing about it, but I can come up with something. That would be the Manchurian. No, I'm not going to do that. That would be silly. Okay. Where did I put that? I put that over here. When I was preparing for these talks, spelled it right. Ah, not forgotten the address of where I put those notes. I would have sworn that was there. No, it's .ca. Yeah. Oh, dang. No, I never used the L. Nope. Oh, well. No, it's downs.ca. It's my own website. I'm pretty sure I got that part right. I don't see why I don't have canberra1.html. Well, that could be the problem. Okay, well, I'm getting that, whatever that is. Oh, you might get to see the back end of my website sooner rather than later, because... Because that's my website, so I obviously have... Hey, isn't that weird? All right, well, doesn't matter. I know where all the links go anyway, so... It's a lot easier to work off that other page. You just click on a link rather than type. Where I'm going to start then, because it really is a good starting point, is with the wiki. How many of you are familiar with the wiki? Way less than half. Okay, let me show you. Instead of preparing for my talks in the week or two prior to coming here to Australia, as I said to the group this morning, I knew I had to be busy in those 2 weeks because, you know, I have so many talks I'm preparing for, so I knew I was going to be working really hard. So I was working really hard, not on my talks, but redesigning my website, and as part of this, I added what's known as a wiki to my website. Here's a wiki. All right, we have to wait. Okay, there we go. Well, that was fast. Speed is improved. This kind of goes in waves. Yeah, it's lunchtime. Yeah. It's interesting. Like, I would think if it's lunchtime, everybody would be online, but not. I think I live in a different world. This is a wiki. You might notice it looks just like an ordinary, everyday web page. And in fact, from the point of view of the reader, it is an ordinary, everyday web page. It looks, walks, talks, feels just like a web page. The big difference between a wiki and any other page that you'll encounter on the web is that at the bottom of the page, there is a link that says, edit this page. And if you click on that link, you're taken into an editing screen. And if I edit this page, it means exactly what it says. You, as a reader, can go in and edit this page. And let's do that. Oh, here's somebody who's actually been editing the page. Isn't that nice? Hello, Cairns. See, I have no more imagination here than I did down there. All I could type down there was Hello Sunshine Coast. So, Hello Cairns and... The other thing to notice is I'm not worrying about formatting or any sort of thing like that. I just have something in mind. I'm typing it. And once I've typed it, I'll save it. And so we'll save it. It thanks me for the contribution. It's a Canadian wiki, so it's very polite. And no joke, not even a titter. Yeah. And then we'll click here. And as you can see, nicely formatted everything. Hello, Cairns. It sure is warm today. You probably consider this a cold wave, but I think of this as pretty warm. Pardon? Oh, okay, something over there. That's the sum total of what there is to a wiki. Okay. Oh, wow. I've already gone through a period in which a room full of highly trained, moderately paid instructional technologists and other experts were talking about a screen being green. I'm wondering about that. This is nothing. I'm always, somebody should do the sociology of our field, because there's so many fascinating things like that. It's endlessly fascinating. And the whole idea of making the projector work with the plastic bags and the thing over the, is so typical and so ordinary and so normal and yet so unremarked on. Anyhow, that's the off-topic stuff. The idea of the wiki, there's the two things to the wiki. How easy it is to edit, first of all, and the fact that anyone can edit it. How easy? Let's do something a little more complicated than just Hello Cairns, because, anybody can do that.
What does wiki stand for? Is that an acronym?
No. Oddly enough, no. Wiki is Hawaiian. It's Hawaiian for quick. Quick. And so wiki is quick. That's all it is. We can call this quick. No. No, nothing like that. It's just, and I know this because you land at the airport in Hawaii, they have a little shuttle bus that takes you around. It's called Wiki Wiki. So I think there's sort of this Hawaiian, right? So like they only have 42 words in the whole language. So every word has three or four meanings. So I think it means something like wick and welcome and all of that sort of thing. Did I say wicked? I meant quick. So anyhow, the little bus is Wiki Wiki, and it may mean quick quick, or it may mean quick welcome, or it may mean quick shuttle, or or anything. So let's do something a little complicated here. Let me see. One. Whatever. Never mind my spelling. You see what I'm doing? I'm just putting up some words, and I'm putting that little pipe character in between them. And I'll start a new line here. Anybody could learn this, right? And could probably spell it better than me. And so there we go. I'll save that. And, now it's slow again. Here we go. And we'll click through here. And lo and behold, table. So, you can do a lot of formatting and so on really quick. I'd throw that in really quickly and easily with the wiki. And I only installed my wiki in preparation for this trip. And in fact, what I did with my wiki, if the link is still here, I have to find it now because things have moved around a bit. Here we go. So I did all the planning for my Australian trip using the wiki. So this session, here's this session. And there are various resources and links and things like that. So if you go to my website, downs.ca, downes.ca, and click on the wiki link, which is at the top of every page, except this one. That figures. Well, it's at the top of the home page anyways. It didn't make sense to put a link to the wiki on top of the wiki. That would be kind of redundant. There we go. Here's the link to the wiki right here. And so if you click on that and then hit the home page of the wiki, scroll down a little bit, you'll find the link to the Australian stuff, and including the link to this talk and resources and so on. Now, the neat thing about this is once you get to that page and you look at the resources that I've put for this talk and for other talks, and you notice that I've missed something really important, or you think that something's not appropriate, you can just go in and change the page. Anybody can change the page of a wiki. This is what makes the wiki different from any other kind of software that there is. Anybody in the world can change the page of a wiki. In fact, if you look at the current state of my wiki, now it's going to wait again. Sorry, for those of you who weren't here in the morning, I've already made the remarks, but the internet is slow, and I'm used to broadband where it just sort of like that, and it comes up. So maybe it's loading. Oh, that's very annoying. Anyhow, what I was going to go back to my wiki, and at the very bottom of the page in, on my wiki, I see somebody's added something in Chinese. I have no idea what it says, but it looks pretty cool. So the Chinese characters always look cool. You know, they're obscenities, but yeah, I'd put it on the shirt. Now, you might be thinking, how on earth could you possibly have a website that anybody could change? How could that work? How could that be useful? Well, this one's never going to come, so... There's a site out there, which I think really puts any sort of doubts about this to rest.
Might be a condition to open up a new browser so you don't have to go back
and forth. Oh, I just gave up on the other page. Now what is it doing? Sorry, I typed wikipedia.org and it came up on my homepage. It's simply not loading. I started this morning, it was way back a long time ago, the sun had just come up. We're talking about good technology and bad technology. Internet Explorer, bad technology. And in so many ways, I won't even get into the ways it's bad technology. If you are using Internet Explorer, stop. I'm completely and dead serious about this. There is an open source browser available out there called Firefox. If you search on Google, you'll find Firefox. The install on your Windows machine, your Linux machine, I'm not sure about Apple, but probably your Apple machine, the install is dead simple. And it will import your bookmarks and stuff and all of that. They've added that to the install. Firefox is open source, it's free, it's incredibly fast, you never see pop-up windows, and they've just released, just 6 days ago in fact, I know that to the day, Firefox 1.0, which is the first production version of Firefox. I've been on Firefox in like 0.3 or something, it's getting better and better, and in case you're wondering, well, should I try something that's new, untested, all of that, when they released Firefox 1.0, they came up with an objective, 1 million downloads in 10 days. They hit the 1 million downloads in 5 days. So there are at least 1 million versions of, or 1 million copies of Firefox 1.0 out there. It's had a huge pickup in the community at large. 1.0, and I haven't seen it because I've been here and I haven't really had good internet access, so I haven't downloaded my own copy of 1.0 yet, but 1.0 integrates an RSS reader right into the software, and that may not mean much to you right now, but by the end of the session, you'll see that integrating an RSS reader into the software really is big news. So, dump Internet Explorer. Use Firefox. You won't get any viruses with Firefox. You won't have security holes with Firefox, so on and so forth. It's a much better browser. I wish I could put it on here, but it's someone else's computer, so I suppose I better not. But because of security, they'd much rather go with the browser with 1 million known security holes as opposed to the browser with none. I mean... Don't use them then.
Well, a big one, I think one of them is Janison, and the other one we use is LearnKey, which actually does work with Janison. LearnKey is definitely one. LearnKey, you have to have internet.
Anyway,
the old guy
on the browser. Yeah. Well, you might test LearnKey with Firefox, and you might find that it actually
maybe
works better.
The latest version will work, but the previous version I've got to 0.02, and it doesn't work.
It hasn't worked. Yeah, the 0.2 is what you tried it on.
Cause
Oh, okay, 9.02. Okay, well, that's fairly recent. That should have worked. But, yeah, I mean, and I will say, and might as well be said, there are people out there, evil, evil people, who design websites such that they have to be accessed using Internet Explorer. If you are designing websites, if you use Internet Explorer specific tags, you are doing a disservice to the world on so many levels. Not the least of which is you are forcing people to use a browser that is a known security threat on their computer. Now, if you use Internet Explorer and browse around the web, you might as well forget about passwords, forget about firewalls and security, and just give your computer to the hackers. Seriously, it's that bad. And they keep trying to fix it. Service Pack 2, da-da-da-da, new security holes. Their fixes create more holes than they create. There's a reason for that. There's a theoretical basis for that. And I'll actually talk a little bit about that later on during the talk, if I remember. And I'll try to remember. Here's Wikipedia. It's come up finally. Once we shut down and restarted Internet Explorer, it found itself again. Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia. Now, there have been it's done, as the name suggests, in a wiki. What does that mean? Anybody can go in and edit any page and, in fact, put any content on any article on Wikipedia. And if you don't believe me, let me pick a random page, and that's a truly random page. I don't know what I'll get. I don't know what I'll get it. I don't even know what it is. Prognolia. Okay. Refers to the system of land grants in the Byzantine Empire. Okay. So, you might, and just as a test for yourself, because I believe in empirical proof in the things that I'm talking about, write this down, and a few days later, give it a couple of days, maybe a week, and then come back and look at this page. Because what we're going to do is find the edit this page link, which I can't. Oh yeah, they've done it that way. Okay. So we'll edit on the side here. All right, and so here we go. Here's the page that we're editing. And that's not the one I thought I was editing. Must be above. They've changed this around. See, this is one of the dangers of...
it's below each topic, so you were talking about the...
Yeah. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. Here we go. Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah, here we go. All right. Da-da-da-da-da refers to a system of land grants in the Byzantine Empire. And a type of purple humped tipple. All right? Now, the audacity of that. I've put complete nonsense in. Now, the main thing I want to show you is I can put complete nonsense into Wikipedia. And I can do it slowly. Okay, here we go. Now, the important thing is, there it is on this page. Okay. Go back to it in a week. See if it's still there. And I would say that the odds are actually, I'd say the odds are excellent. It won't be there after a couple hours. But I'm giving it a week or so. You see, the idea is anybody can edit a page in Wikipedia. But that means anybody can correct purple humped hippos in Wikipedia. And in fact, it's easier to correct a page than it is to deface a page. Moreover, the correctors far outnumber the defacers. So Wikipedia, because of its openness, is importantly self-correcting. And actually, it's because it's open, the articles and the information tends to settle toward what is commonly believed to be true by everyone. Because there are many controversial topics that are discussed by Wikipedia. This is not one of them. I don't think there is any controversy regarding whatever this is, I can't even pronounce it. They should put a little pronunciation guide. Of course, I say they should put a little pronunciation guide means I should put a little pronunciation guide, or someone like me, because the other thing about Wikipedia, of course, is it is completely run by volunteers. All of the content, every entry in Wikipedia was written by a pool of volunteers, and volunteers who do not even get credit for submitting their material. Happily, that means I won't be blamed for this, too. And you might think this cannot possibly work. And you'd be wrong. Wikipedia has been compared with Encyclopedia Britannica, and with an allowance for the occasional purple-humped hippo that gets put in there like that, the content, the quality of the content in Wikipedia is comparable, and in many cases better, than Encyclopedia Britannica. Better because they're not bound by the length restrictions of a printed volume. In terms of number of articles, and this came out just a few days ago, Wikipedia, well, they just published their 1 millionth article in Wikipedia. If you think about it, 1 million separate entries. Now, they've got entries for U.S. cities, they've got entries for obscure things like this, they've got entries for everything in Wikipedia. And again, the vast majority of them are good authoritative articles, including this article. This article looks authoritative, and I'll bet you dollars to donuts if I went to some place where they actually talk about this, probably not Encyclopedia Britannica, this would be found to be accurate. This would be found to be dead on, except for the hippos part. The key, though, is, you know, is it used? Wikipedia is used by more people than Encyclopedia Britannica. So, better content, more readers. Encyclopedia, old way, really expensive, thousands of dollars to buy, millions of dollars to produce, highly paid professionals. Wikipedia, ragtag army of volunteers who are working on a system that has no editorial control whatsoever. And Wikipedia is winning. This is the new world we're entering, and this is the first step of this. Go ahead. Might still be there. Changes happen pretty quickly. Oh, it's been there for years. 5 years anyways. I'm not sure exactly when it started. Honestly, I don't know. But as long as I've known about wikis, Wikipedia has existed. I'm just looking for purple hippos here. Let's see if we can find it. Yeah. It's not there anymore. The change that I made, this is the kind of traffic that happens on Wikipedia. The change that I just made has cycled off the list of recent changes. But on any given page, you can get the page history. And in the page history, we see the current and last, the versions, right? Here's the change, almost certainly the change that I made. And we can look at all the different versions all the way back. As long as this page has existed, all of the versions of the page exist. And so what happens is, an editor will come along and they'll see the hippo and say, that's a stupid change. So just revert to the previous version. And it's a one-click thing. It'll take them less time to one-click back to the previous version than it did for me to type that nonsense. That's what makes it very correctable very quickly. The discussion option at the top leads to a discussion area. I guess that was kind of obvious. And typically, now I've followed the discussion link from various pages, and you know, I think it's different for every page. But typically, it's discussion about the content of the page. And a lot of, like I say, a lot of the pages are controversial, and people will argue with each other about, you know, just what the page should say, why the page should say it, so on and so forth. A lot of issues get resolved outside the domain of the page itself. and it's going to take forever to get here, which is too bad. But we'd see that in a second. Wikipedia is a community that works. What makes Wikipedia work, in my mind, is that it's so easy. And that's why I started with it. It's kind of a high-level concept to be starting a talk with. But the key to Wikipedia is, essentially, if you want to put some content in, you just go to the edit window and you start typing. Yeah, we're not going to get to that page. It's just Internet Explorer's choking on it again. Get rid of this volume control. That might be messing it up. Jeez. See, if we had Firefox on here, we wouldn't be crashing in that. Well, we'd still be dependent on the bandwidth, of course. But, well, no, the bandwidth is part of the problem. Same bandwidth, a page in Firefox will load twice as fast. It's not... Internet, like all of these Windows programs, they don't just talk to the page you're trying to load. They are constantly chattering all over the internet with, well, I think Microsoft Central, but there's the same page load in Internet Explorer seems to actually require more bits to download. And there are reasons for that. You read some of the stuff and like, Microsoft has done all kinds of shortcuts in the technical standards with Internet Explorer, and what happens a lot of the time is there's the exchange that's supposed to happen between the browser and the website, and there's a certain sort of exchange that's supposed to set off, so that the browsers know that they're talking to each other in the same language. Internet Explorer just assumes that it's talking Microsoft. And if the other site, the server, is not a Microsoft server, that kind of stalls things. And it has to back up and try something again. So it actually, Microsoft, they designed the Internet Explorer specifically for Internet Information Server. And it breaks the rest of it. That's tight integration. Tight integration breaks. Because you can't always count on the other people on the other side having the same sort of technology that you have. Now, where was I going here? Oh, yes. Now, the next step in this progression, we're working our way through a logical progression here, and I really do wish I could remember what that original page address was, because that would make life a lot easier. Because now I'm working without notes, right? The next progression is the blog. And we started talking about the blog before the lunch break in the morning session, and actually finished off on that topic. Had a great back and forth. And take this particular discussion in a slightly different direction. I'm still going to go to Blogger, because we got about like one page into it. But now looking at Blogger, we'll have... the experience of Wikipedia and wikis right behind us, and I'll log in here. This is Blogger. What a blog is, and this will be repetition from the people from this morning, is a website with a series of entries or a series of items called posts, whereby these items are organized in reverse chronological order. That is, the newest one first, then the next newest, then the next newest, and so on. And in the end, that's all a blog is. A blog can and typically does contain any sort of content. Typically, a blog will be created by one person. The person will own this blog. There are such a thing as group blogs out there, but they really tend to be a rarity, like, one-tenth of 1% or something like that. The vast majority of blogs are owned by single individuals who are expressing their own view in their own space. Blogger is a website that was set up in order to enable people to create their own blogs, even if they do not have access to a web server. There is software that you can get, such as Movable Type or Radio Userland. Movable Type or WordPress that will allow you to set up blogging on your own web server. But the vast majority of people, when they start with blogging, they'll start either with Blogger or with a similar service called LiveJournal. LiveJournal is a bit trickier to get into and start up on, so I'm not going to show that. Blogger is as simple as it gets. Anybody can start an account on Blogger. Anybody can create a blog using Blogger. And it's free. And it's even ad-free now, because Blogger was purchased by Google, and it took Google a little while, but then Google removed the ads from Blogger. And then they turned around. It's kind of cool, because when Blogger was owned by Pyra, the company that founded it, their business model was they would have banner ads at the top, right? It was the sales of the banner ads that would fund the company. And Google took the banner ads off, and then they introduced what they call their AdSense program. This program allows people who have websites, including websites on Blogger, to tap into Google and run little text-based ads. And what makes Google really unique is it shares the profits from these ads with the bloggers. So not only is it free, if you run the ads, you might actually get paid for it. Not much, but you know, if you have a blog that has a million readers, you might actually make a lot of money. Not that it happens very often. It's, you know, like singing pop songs or whatever. You know, there are a million singers and one pop star. So let's look at a blog. Here's a blog named Downs. Big surprise, eh? This is just a test blog. I haven't really done anything fancy. I haven't done anything at all. But we can view my blog. Here's the blog. Do you like the mod colors? And see, I didn't even get past the Sunshine Coast bit yesterday. This morning, you can see the features of the blog here. The dated entries, reverse chronological order. They're very short, so on and so forth. What I really want to show you, and what's really important, is what's involved in editing a blog. So let's create a new post. A new post, again, is a new item. And you can show this tape to your politicians and say, here's why we need more bandwidth in our colleges and universities, because this is a short page and shouldn't take a long time to load. Here we go. Oh, well, that was sudden. Changed. No matter. Okay, Internet Explorer will be a little while playing with this, but the elements, the main things that I want to show you are here. To create a blog post, we basically have two fields. Hello, Karens. I really have no imagination when I do these samples. As you can see, what I've typed in here is the title and the content. Now I'll publish it, and we'll wait for a little bit. The important thing here is that I want you to notice how simple that was. It's simple enough for five-year-olds to use. How do I know? Because there are five-year-old bloggers. It's simple enough that blogging has been rolled out for entire colleges, entire universities. Even Harvard has provided blogs. Harvard Law School has provided blogs for all their students, staff, and alumni. In the article that I wrote for EDUCAUSE Review titled Educational Blogging, which is right at the top of my website, so you see it there if you go to that, I talk about blogging at the Institut Saint-Joseph in Quebec City in Canada, where blogging has been rolled out for a class of grade 5 students, and these students actually create their own blog entries. And how can they do that? Because it's so simple. This is basically all that there was involved. And now let's look at the blog that I've just done, and I'll have to reload it here, of course. So then we'll wait. Can you see I've been doing this before? Hello, camera. Hello, Karens. I probably should have put Karens in the title so it stood out as well. That's how simple blogging is. And what happens is people get almost addicted to this interface. You can publish on the web without even thinking about it. What's really neat about blogs is that what you've just seen is you know, the standard form input screen, but blogging is expanding so that you can, for example, use your SMS on your cell phone and send a blog post by your cell phone. Or you can send an email and email yourself a blog post. There is some blogging software out there where instead of text-based posts, you use little sound files. And so you can actually phone your blog and leave a message, and it shows up as an audio blog post in your audio blog. There's a site of photo blogs are another example of multimedia moving into this. And again, you take a picture with your cell phone, call your blog, send your picture, it's posted up on your blog. No internet, not needed. The ease of the interface is incredibly, incredibly important. And in my mind, has been the thing that has contributed to the rapid rise of blogging. Now, how popular is blogging? There are quite literally millions of blogs, at least 3 million blogs, probably close to 4 million blogs. Technorati, which I'll show you in a few minutes, indexes, the last time I saw was something like 3 point something million blogs. Huge pile of blogs. That's mostly what I want to say about blogs. I'll ask if there are any comments or questions at this point. Yes. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
So how would you access somebody else's blog?
Oh, okay. Well, in the first instance, it's just a website. So if you went to Google and typed for the name of that person or something that they were writing about, the blog might show up. Very often, bloggers link to other bloggers, and if you're just wandering around on the web, you'll find a list of blogs on the side of a web page. It's called a blog roll. And so a lot of discovery of blogs happens by just following the links from one blog to another blog. Those are the main ways that people find blogs on the web. In a little bit, I'll talk about RSS and things like Technorati, and you'll see that it's actually a lot easier to find a blog than you might imagine. It's becoming incredibly easy to find blogs.
But you can link directly.
Absolutely.
To that particular blog by using that URL.
Yeah, you can link right to that page.
If you have a web page and you want people to go to your blog or your web page, you put that link. But I told everyone, like you said, if you typed in hello sunshine, try to do a Google search.
Odds are good. Well, let's try it. Oh, I don't have a look. Firefox has a little Google field up there. So I don't actually have to go to Google to use it. And now I'm so used to doing that I look up there in the upper right and it's not there, and I said, what's it broken? But that was reasonably quick. Yeah, I got my own special Google. Actually, it was faster, wasn't it? Check that out. That's been there for 2 days. Well, Google owns Blogger, right? How long do you think it takes Google to index Blogger? Yes, you can. A blog is just another web page, and so you can make yourself private blogs. I don't know if Blogger allows private blogs. It seems to me that they do. I do know that LiveJournal allows blogs to be private, and if you're using web server software, then there are all kinds of ways of limiting access to your blog, using what's known as a .ht access file to put up a password in front of your blog. So it can be as secure or as open as any other web page.
a tool or the capability? Good blogs, what you could use them for? Or
Yeah, in my article I listed five things that blogs are typically used for. One thing is, and this was the earliest use of blogs in learning, was for an instructor to create his or her own blog and then put things up like, you know, important course dates and stuff like that. You know, just general course information. And then as time went by, instructors found themselves using the blog to find and refer students to interesting items about their course and whatever. I got lots of examples of an instructor using their blog to pass on, say, archaeology resources to an archaeology class. Another use of blogs is to have students use the blog either in the context of an assignment or just more free form on the particular topic, and to record their own thinking or their own discoveries in that field. In some cases, the use of a blog to post content in the educational context becomes part of the course itself. There have been issues about this, and we talked about these in the morning, whereby one of the things that makes the blog really work is it belongs to the person. They can type whatever they want in the blog. But now if you're telling them to blog about archaeology or blog about trigonometry, it sort of impacts on the usefulness of a blog, and it has a limited, it limits the effectiveness of blogs. But basically, any place where you can use a fairly free-flowing communication tool where it's really easy to input and update content, and any place where it's useful to have content that, that is dated and searchable by Google, that's a good place for a blog. It won't do everything for you, but it will do that.
Stephen, I find it's wonderful as a reflective tool for
learners.
Sure. Then to express, you know, what did I really learn out of these? Where does it situate in what I do and where I am and the place that I live in? And it doesn't matter if nobody but them ever reads it. It's allowing them to get out in front of them from here to there and see what it is that they feel and how they operate within that learning. And it doesn't matter what they're learning, it's a wonderful reflection too.
Now, what was I going to say? I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yeah, important point. Blogging is writing, and writing in public. And if you know your students or you know people generally, you'll know not everybody's keen on that. So one of the things I put in my article, and it's really important, blogging is not for everybody. Some people will take to it like a fish in water, and other people will take to it not like a fish in water. And so, you know, you sort of have to choose your context of application. Okay. Now, the progression, right? We've had wikis, we've had blogs. Now I really wish I had the other page that I can't find because the links are a bit harder to remember, but... I'm sorry? No, it won't work because the page I was using is just there. It's not linked to from anything. But it's a good idea, though. And it might actually be in Google, but... This session is by and for you. You want me to Google for my notes for this talk? actually, I don't know why I typed in Google. I'm sitting right there. Okay.
Try down Canberra.
I'm pretty sure this is not indexed. No, that's not it. No. No. Okay. No matter. We'll wing it. I know where I want to go. I'm already out of order a little bit, but that's okay. Where I want to move now is to here. This is an instance of an application called Scoop. Scoop is written in a language called, a computing language called Perl. And as you can see from the design on the screen, Scoop is an application that was intended and is largely used for newspaper or journalism type websites. It's looks like a newspaper, and typically you'd have articles with a little more substance in them than Hello Sunshine Coast. I'll log in here, hoping I got the password correct. Yep, okay. So here I am on the administrator side of Scoop. And the main thing I'm trying to show here with this is the same thing that I showed with wikis and the same thing that I showed with blogs is the submission of a story. Now, I actually have to choose a section in Scoop, but they've helpfully provided me with one called News. And I'll show my my great writing ability there. And here's an article that I will submit. I'm submitting this article. And there it goes. And now let's go back home to my front page, and there's my article. Scoop is what is known as a content management system. Now, Scoop will allow you to do many more things than simply post articles, but the important thing I'm trying to point out here is that the use of Scoop to do something like post content on a regular basis into a site like this is something that's very easy. There are many administration tools, and here they are, Archive Story List. The Scoop will allow you to put up a new poll. It lets you arrange your site into sections. It lets you define little boxes of content that will always show up. It lets you feed advertising into your site. It lets you manage subscriptions for things like an email list, so on and so forth. This is a very typical of a range of tools that are designed like this. As I say, Scoop is written in Perl. Here's one that's written in a slightly different computer language called PHP. Oops. Again, it's much preferable to have the links here because then you never type your links wrong. Come on, you can do it, you can do it. Just a little bit more. This is a content management system called PostNuke. As you can see, it's very similar to the Scoop site. It looks a little bit, the Scoop site and this PostNuke site, I'm showing you the default configurations out of the box, basically. I should point out that with both Scoop and PostNuke, you can customize these pages like crazy as an administrator. You add your own colors, add your own text. You don't have to, you don't need to know any of that. They will work beautifully right out of the box, but you can change them as much as you want. I'll log in here to this PostNuke site. Whoops. You know, you wouldn't believe how many times I've misspelled my own name. And for those of you who are counting keystrokes on the password, yes, they were different passwords. Hope you noticed that. And I came here. Oh, well, now that's pretty weird. How did that happen? Wow. Oh, now I've got two. No. Isn't that strange? But I should be logged in now anyways. All right. Internet Explorer. Yeah, I just, every time I use it, I just shrug my head. Give your head a shake. It's Internet Explorer. Don't try to understand. All right, I am in the, I am logged in. So I'll click on the administration menu, and we'll see, again, just like with Scoop, the administrator in PostNuke has a wide variety of options. And I'll go straight to the same sort of thing that I did in Scoop. I'm going to go to Add Story. And here we go. Hello, Cairns. And we'll select a topic. Call it Linux. That's another stupid Microsoft thing. Hello, Cairns. And we'll click Submit. PostNuke requires that you preview your story first, at least in this configuration. You can change that. So there's the story. I've finished previewing it. So let's publish this puppy. And so I'll publish my article in PostNuke. And I'm done. Let's go home and have a look and see if it showed up. And of course, we know that it did, right? And there it is. Very simple. I'm sorry? Oh, yeah, you can change all of that. Yeah, you can have no photo there. What these little penguins are, each in PostNuke, you have various categories that you can assign your articles to, and then you can give each category its own distinctive icon. And that's what that little photo is the icon. I just keep choosing Linux as my category every time because I only have one or two categories. I haven't defined any others. But you can have the icons show up, you can nuke the icons, you can change the icons, so on and so forth.
So if you have to log into Linux, or only log into
editor? With these, well, you can set it how you want, but this normal configuration is anybody can see it. It's a web page, right? But you have to log in order to edit it. And with these content management systems, you can actually set various levels of security so that anybody can see it, but you have to log in to add content, or you can have it so that anyone can see it, members of the site can add content, and then there's the admin menu. You can have it so that anybody can add content to the site, and then you, as the editor, moderate it. There's a whole range of configuration like that. Now, what's the kicker? Part of the real kicker to this is all of this stuff, including these content management systems, and there are other content management systems. There's Drupal. I forgot the other one. It's on the sheet of paper. Drupal, PostNuke, Scoop, and
Mambo.
Sorry?
Mambo is another one.
Mambo is another one. And there's another one though that I'm thinking of as well. Yeah. It's on the wiki page. All of these are free software. All of these are open source software. In fact, everything that I've shown you here so far this morning, you can get the software for wikis. There's PHP Wiki and a whole variety of other wiki software. I use software called Erfurt Wiki, which was free. For blogging, there's WordPress, which is free software. Or you can just go to Google. You don't even need to worry about software. For these content management systems, this is all free software. The whole works. All of this is done basically with free and open source software. And the database in the back end, a lot of these use a database in the back end. You can use MySQL, which is free open source database software, or if you want, you can use Firebird, which is another free open source database software. They all run on Linux machines. They can run on Windows, but who knows whether Windows will not crash. But they can run on Windows. The programming languages that they use, Perl and PHP typically, free open source programming languages. All of this can be done for free. All of this can be done by a person of average to less than average programming skills. The install on these things is incredibly simple. And, yeah, you might need maybe a wee bit of help from computer services, especially on the Perl stuff. Scoop is a bit difficult to install. I don't recommend Scoop for people without a strong background in computers, but the other stuff will run brilliantly. Post-Nuke, which you saw there, took me less than half an hour to install. I did it myself and just sat down, put it on the site, and installed. And the reason why it took half an hour is because it takes a certain amount of time for these things to write themselves to a hard drive. You know, they don't just write themselves instantly. So most of the half hour is just sitting there waiting for it to finish writing itself in. And then I went in and played with it for a bit. And that was the rest of the half hour. I quite mean seriously played with it. It was probably installed in 5 minutes, but it took me 25 minutes to really convince myself that it had been. So I think there's a real lesson there. Colleges, TAFEs, universities are talked into buying software that is incredibly expensive. Content management system software. We have content management software where I work, and of course all the various businesses and that. They spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on this stuff, and it just kills me because it's free and available. It requires less maintenance than the commercial stuff. The licenses won't expire, and it works. And it works really well. It's more full-featured than the commercial software. And it's getting more so every day. So I cannot see why anybody would pay any money for any of this content type management software. Those of you who are working in the world of learning and learning management systems, this wave is hitting your shores. There are already free and open source learning management systems. What's the name of it? Moodle? Yes. I've got Moodle, Google, Post, and all these names on the brain. I actually have Moodle installed on my server at home, but I'm not accessing it at the moment. But Moodle, free and open source. Saki, S-A-K-A-I, is more free and open source software intended to support educational applications. If I was in the business of designing software for the support of learning, I'd be thinking about either hiring a lot of really good salespeople, making really good friends with the university president, or getting out of the business. Because almost all of the work that's being done in this field is coming out as free and open source software. And it's almost like the universities and colleges, at least at a certain level, have collectively come to the idea that it's really stupid to buy software to do this stuff. Now, of course, we're still in a world of WebCT and Blackboard and Saba and all of those, but I really think that their days are numbered. Now, when I look at something like Blackboard or WebCT, and they've started making deals, they've started opening up their access into their sites a little bit. And I think that this is a reaction to the competition that's coming from the free and open source movement.
Are there any free sources of portfolios?
I don't know. I wish I could say I know, but I don't know. It would be astonishing to me if there weren't, but portfolios is new enough that they might not have finished writing it yet. I'm sure there's some coming down the pipe, but I just don't know what they would be. Does anyone know? Free and open source portfolio software? It's got to be. But
there's a self-management one I saw. I can't remember the name of it, but it allows you to track your learning and your progress and your performance and all that kind of stuff like that. It's
database driven as well, web driven, but I can't remember the name of it. I can find out. Good question. Yeah, I wasn't even planning to touch portfolios with it. Because I haven't really done a whole lot of work in portfolios. I should look at them more. Any other comments or questions? I don't know if Moodle can do that or not. Honestly, I do know that there is open source software that can do that task. I forget the name of it off the top of my head. Pardon?
Moodle. We actually set up a commercial training organization online using Moodle.
Yeah.
And we had to leave it because it didn't, and we purchased a solution because it didn't really do everything that we needed it to do, particularly in terms of government compliance. Moodle operates from a particular pedagogical standpoint, and when you're looking at and it, I really like it, it's a really good tool, it's very flexible, but for us it didn't do everything that we wanted it to do. That's getting better, but it's still
it's a bit too lightweight, isn't it?
It just didn't quite have the power that we needed it to.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, if you've got access to a bank of programs, you can tweak it.
That's right.
Integrate it into your existing system. You're laughing, but, you know, particularly in this part of the world and in the debt sector, we don't have access to those sorts of luxuries. So you really, you know, the mantra really is, you know, free is not cheap or free. You know, you do end up paying somewhere along the line. But you have to be very judicious in what you choose and what you look.
Absolutely. I would never claim otherwise. I mean, with any software, there are going to be expenses. And that applies to free software or commercial software. There's no question about it. And if you listen to Microsoft, they'll tell you that the after installation expenses of the open source software are significantly higher for the open source software than for the commercial applications. I personally don't believe that that's true, but Microsoft will claim otherwise. But you get software, you're going to need to support it. I think that that's true with commercial software. I think it's true with non-commercial software. Some software will meet your needs, some won't. Would I recommend Moodle for everyone? Absolutely not. I wouldn't use it for myself because Moodle doesn't do the sort of things that I'm trying to do with my website. Other people find Moodle great. If you have very specific reporting requirements that follow government specifications, Moodle probably won't do the job for you unless you can get somebody in there who knows a little PHP who can do this this coding for you. And it will eventually, because sooner or later somebody's going to come along with a little PHP, they'll add that to Moodle, they'll contribute that to the Moodle project, and it'll be available to everyone. So something like this is very much along the lines of not ready right now. This is like Firefox up until 6 days ago. Didn't do a lot of the things that you wanted to, but now basically it's a full-featured browser, and all of the open source software is like that. It sort of gradually moves to the point of being full-featured software. And different software is at different stages of maturity.
And you're right, Steve, about the commercial vendors going towards seeing these companies starting to make that move. Wayne Holden from Jamstack announced that next year they will be going open source with the Jamstack platform. So he's also moving into that, able to do your own thing and be open in terms of the coding.
Yeah, it's really important to be able to do that. Because, I mean, the concept of open source isn't about the idea of it being free software. The concept of open source is about the idea of having control over your own tools. Being able to actually go into the software and make a change and make it do what you want it to do. It's about being able to access your own data, even though you're not using that product anymore, because you know how the data was put there and what format the data was put into. So, you know, to just say, well, it doesn't save money, just simply touches on one aspect of open source software, but it doesn't touch on the whole thing. But the main thing I want to get, and we're about to take a break here. I don't know if we're scheduled to, but according to my clock, it's 2:33 a.m. And I'm due. I think it's really significant and worth noting that all of this is free software. But the more important thing is, look at the publishing capacity that we have at our fingertips. Very easy way of creating web contents. All three of these things I've showed, the wiki, the blog, and the content management system, in the end, they all amount to really simple ways in which any person can create highly structured web content. And that's going to have significant implication for the stuff that I'll talk about after the break when I start talking about metadata, repositories, distribution networks and stuff. Huge implication. I know I took some time with some fairly basic stuff laying out this groundwork, but now you see the groundwork. You see how easy it is to make this content. After the break, we'll talk about what we're going to do with it.
It's just an example that the idea that you someone from Lonely Planet got up and gave a bit of a case study, and they used something like this content management system for their writers and people contributing all over the world, and it comes in and it gets stored in an XML database which then automatically updates their website and provides the base for their next version of the printed book. So with one input, they're queuing all those birds at the one sun. So the capacity for something like this to develop learning resources in many, many formats with just, you know, a one hit is actually really quite astounding.
It is. It's totally astounding. They're probably using an Excite database for the XML.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, Excite, free open source XML, native XML database. Just thought I'd throw that in.
and for teachers who want to play with this stuff, and the local flavor of this, it's come back to global from where we sit. If you do a search on web hosting plus fantastic code, you'll get up a set of web host companies that provide cheap web hosting if you're willing to spend $14 to $15 a month on your own host website, so, and enough to register yourself a domain name. Choose one that comes with the fantastic coding application, and you will get your choice of all of these softwares that you've seen this afternoon. You click the button, it automatically installs it on your website server for you, and all you have to do is go upload it. You don't even have to do the installation. It takes, I guarantee you, because that's what my website runs on, 5 minutes to do the install. Do you really want to install this on the server? Yep. Sit there, little bar goes zoop, and you don't have to worry about broadband costs on their server. And it's there, and you can customize or play with it. Nobody knows it's there until you tell them, so if you crash it a few times, it doesn't matter. You just uninstall it, reinstall it, start again from scratch. And it's absolutely free. So, Google search, web hosting, plus Fantastico. Queensland, there's a couple of web hosting companies in Queensland that do. One of them is CoastHost. And their support, even that the cheap website and support is excellent. It's available for us to go play with. And just find out what you have to do this stuff and how easy it is.
So on that note, why don't we take our break now, and we'll get back together in when?
20 minutes.
20 minutes, which will take us to what time?
10 to 4. Do you want to make it 15,
4 to 4? 4 to 4?
4 to 4.
I'd rather make it 15, because I've got 2 hours of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so let's make it 4:15, we'll get back here then.
Okay.